Welcome back, everybody, to the Cave of Solitude, your pop culture and comic book podcast, coming to you from the megacity metropolis of Toronto. And for this episode, we are tied in to one of my favorite cities in the world, New York City, with the one and only Matthew Klein of Valiant Comics. Matthew, welcome back to the show. How the hell are you?
I'm always better when I'm here in the Cave of Solitude with you, my friend. It is great to be back, and great to be back in New York City. I'm finally home after about 3.5 months down in the great state of Texas. Man, I have everything going on and can't be happier.
Did you miss New York City?
Of course you miss New York City. As I was saying before we started recording, I couldn't get a single bagel down there. But I will not lie, walking out in there in the farmlands and the ranches and the pastures with the horses and cows, they did have a pool where I was at, which is hard to do in Manhattan. You know, for the summer and the warmer months, it had some appeal, but it's hard not to miss home.
Yeah, for sure. And like we were saying before, getting back to New York City, one of those things is that slice of pizza that is pretty much... You can't compare, other than maybe going to Italy itself, New York pizzas, you know, there's nothing quite like it.
My weekend will have some Grimaldi's in it, that is for sure.
Fantastic. It's one of my favorite spots in New York. I love Grimaldi's. Which one do you live close to? You said you live close to one. Whereabouts is the one that you live close to?
The one that's closest to me is at 21st and 6th Avenue.
Okay, that's the one where it's like, is it looks like it's beside a church and it's got like this secret door? Yeah, I've been to that one.
Yeah.
That's a good one. I love it.
It ain't bad, that's for sure.
So what's New York City like right now? I mean, I know we can tune into the news and we hear all the reports and the numbers and things like that, but how are you feeling back home?
It's weirdly normal.
Okay.
I came back and I wasn't exactly sure what to expect. And, you know, we're recording this. It's about mid-July. Mm-hmm. But it is like 95% of people are wearing masks. I haven't seen any, you know, businesses in my neighborhood that are like blatantly non-compliant with any of the guidelines going on. People are keeping their social distance. All the markets, you know, have food and toilet paper and bread, like, and milk and eggs. Nothing's running out anywhere. And, you know, and people are the same curmudgeon-y assholes as they've always been. it's pretty great. And, you know, with the expanded outdoor dining, like, it almost feels like a European city. There are a bunch of, like, smaller streets closed down. People are outside having a beer, enjoying a little dining, supporting the restaurants, supporting local businesses. You definitely have some places that are closed down, but the majority of them are opening up or already opened back up. Actually, my favorite ice cream place in the neighborhood just opened back up last night. I'm going to go give them a bit of business this weekend too. So my COVID-19 is well intact. I think I've put on about 10 pounds so far, so 9 more to go.
Right on. That's great. I mean, it was difficult, especially in the beginning with all of the things that you're used to doing, those little rituals you have that you've got to now readjust to get a couple of those things back. It's really important, I think, even just for our mental health. Of course, we want to stay safe and we got to be masked up and do whatever precautions are necessary to keep things contained. But it's nice to hear that at least for people who live there, it feels somewhat normal again. I look forward to going back to New York. I go there at least once a year, at the very least. So not being able to go this year is hurting my heart. But it's good to hear things are headed in the right direction.
They definitely feel that way as of today. And the next time you come down, we'll get some Grimaldi.
Yeah, sounds good. How are things going as far as work is concerned? How did everything affect? You said you were away from home. How did it affect the business of Valiant Entertainment?
You know, I'll tell you what. We all got on the work-from-home bandwagon, obviously, you know, keeping everybody safe. And it's worked out pretty darn well. You know, as far as the workflow goes, it really hasn't presented, you know, any challenges. It's a little weird at first because you're so used to having that immediacy of people in the office next to you or right down the hall. Mm-hmm. So there's a little bit of a communications learning curve that you got to get through and kind of get over some assumptions you make about the way you communicate. But once you get into that groove, and it only took a few weeks, you know, we were pretty much still working at the same rate as we ever was. You know, obviously we had to adjust with the marketplace in terms of the output and pencils down, pencils are back up. You just got to adapt with time and keep going. But as far as the actual working goes, it's been really, really smooth.
Is there anything now that is changing in the game plan or in discussions, especially when it comes to like the multimedia aspect? Because this thing hit right when the first movie was hitting theaters, and obviously the movies in general right now are not what anyone planned for 2020. So going forward, is there a change in possibilities of how things can be approached because of this new normal in a way?
I think first of all, let's be perfectly frank, Bloodshot was the number one movie worldwide for about 3 months. Okay. Which is a pretty amazing feat.
Right.
I think that and this is just me speculating, this is not me with any insider information, you know, I don't handle that side of the business, I handle publishing.
Right.
In terms of sales and marketing. But, you know, all the conversations I hear from people in the industry is just that everybody's going to look for what the opportunities are to come out of this. I think that, you know, seeing video on demand soaring in many ways is lighting up people's eyes and going, ooh, there's another opportunity here. The way in which we're consuming, the way in which we're constructing it, the way in which people are going to be making films and television and animation moving forward, I think is all going to be adjusted. And I think there's a lot of opportunity here. I think there's a lot of really good data that people are going to get for how people want to consume that content going forward. And for the next 3 months, the next year, the next 5 years, we'll see where it is. Now it feels like there's a revolution in the way that people consume and what people are looking for every 3-5 years, because the technology advances so quickly and the distribution systems are evolving so much. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, necessity is the mother of all invention. And I believe that this incredibly trying time for the entertainment industry is going to cause a lot of really exciting innovation as we start to reemerge. And I think you're seeing that too, even in the comic book industry and how the stores are surviving and some are thriving right now as well. So, and I think that you're seeing it in businesses in every sector. People are learning to adapt and they're learning to evolve and they're learning to try new things and they're learning to pay close attention to the marketplaces in a way that they haven't had to in a while. And they're reevaluating the assumptions that we've been operating on. And whenever you do that, there will be growth and there will be positive change.
Yeah. What's some of the things that you've learned on your side of the business with the changes that occurred? Like, for instance, there was for a couple months, there were no Diamond wasn't shipping out any books. It made total sense. Now, you know, shops are back opening up again with either curbside pickup or a limited amount of people in stores. But the scare that a lot of people initially may have had about how this was going to affect the industry, like you said, there are some stores that are thriving. So what have you learned on your end of the business?
You know, it's funny. I think that one of the things that we're seeing in the industry is really this incredible support from the comics readership to their local businesses.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I keep hearing right now from a lot of different stores is that they have casual customers, people that, you know, maybe would come in once or twice every few months, but now they're coming in more often because they want to support their local business. And the comic shop is almost a source of entertainment and community in itself, in a way that a movie theater or dine-in restaurant or other places like that could have been. And
right.
So it's a very fascinating history wherein that comics have always fared relatively well during times of economic uncertainty, volatility, or downtimes. And I think you're going to still see that in this case, because it is a marketplace that for a relatively low dollar amount, you can still enjoy entertainment. You can still spend money on a luxury item. You can still indulge your creativity and your escapism. And so you're seeing new customers and you're seeing casual customers come in more frequently to a lot of places. I think that you're also really seeing, in a lot of ways, this kind of boom for social sales. And by that, I mean sales done through social media channels on Instagram, Facebook have, like, the ways in which retailers are now turning to these digital platforms to generate business and reach their customer base and keep that sense of community is inspiring and is being done to a level that hasn't been done before. And I'm seeing a ton of places that are even now putting more attention to online, to mail order. We've seen places that are developing personal shopper tutorials and services that, you know, hadn't really been done before, hadn't needed to be done before, hadn't been seen as priorities. And now they're seeing, oh my God, there's all this new revenue and there's all these new ways of making money and keeping the business alive and reaching people and reaching new people. And that's really exciting. And I think that you're going to see, even if and when there's a return to normalcy in terms of business practices, this is stuff that's going to stay with the industry for a long time.
Yeah, that's always nice to have that, you know, light at the end of the tunnel, where initially everything was just doom and gloom for, you know, every aspect of life, it felt like. And it's not to say that there aren't still concerns. There's definitely still concerns for everything that we're going with now, but it's for those vestiges of where we find our little bit of peace in our, you know, even in sports. There's something to be said about that cultural thing of getting together and sharing in that experience. So to know that the comic book shops did not disappear the way some people were speculating, as they always tend to do. It's always doom and gloom in the comic industry. To see that it is still thriving and people miss it, and there are new things that are opening up. Like even a fellow podcaster, a friend of mine, he started a Fastball Special. Martin Slam Duncan, shout out to Martin. He started a Sketchomania, he calls it. So every other Tuesday, he's got different pros who go up there. And because we don't have Comic-Con right now, we're doing these sketch battles. And the stuff that they're doing is going to a charity. And it's, you know, gaining more and more people and more pros wanting to be a part of it. So like you said, the necessity or the inventions that come up, that sort of creativity we create out of necessity, is beautiful. Amongst all of the negative stuff that you see, there's a lot of good that's coming out of it, which is, it's always hopeful.
Well, and that's the thing, right? There's always, you know, when you're on a precipice and everything is unknown and everything that you understood the way business to be and that you understood the way your life's passion was going to go suddenly get threatened. Of course there's going to be some doom and gloom. Of course there's going to be panic. Of course there's going to be, you know, that inclination to turn negative. But I'll tell you what, the stores that, you know, that pulled up their sleeves and got into the elbow grease and, you know, were diversified in terms of their product and had the capability to lean into these new ways of generating sales and revenues and reaching their customer base. And creators especially, the response to creators has been incredible. When everybody was being told to put their pencils down at so many publishers, and they went out and they opened up commissions lists, and they started promoting themselves more aggressively on social media too, you saw an amazing, amazing response from people wanting to support them. And that, you know, that is the truly most special aspect of it, is the support the community can give to each other in times like these.
Yeah, absolutely. So how much do you miss being able to go to a live wrestling event right now?
So much. I was actually last night, because, you know, now Extreme Rules is over and SummerSlam is the next big WWE show. And so what I'm doing is I'm going to go back and I'm watching every single SummerSlam chronologically all the way through. So it's just on, it's like basically the SummerSlam is on in the background whenever I'm not working. And last night I was watching the very first show I ever went to, which is SummerSlam 1990 in Philadelphia. I was 3 years old. Mm. And and just watching it and like remembering a bit what it was like to be there. And I my heart ached a little bit. Just like, I've missed that live crowd and that announcement and just the sound of the bumps being taken off the mat. And I'm looking very, very forward to that first show. I don't care what it costs, whatever that first show back at the Barclays Center and Madison Square Garden, I am determined to be in that crowd. Nice. That's what credit cards are there for. Make stupid decisions that will absolutely last a lifetime. And I cannot wait for that feeling again.
Absolutely. I think you hit the nail on the head, right? Sometimes you have to make those stupid decisions because the investment in that memory will never be able to be taken away from you, which is what matters, I think.
The following 6 months might be a little,
yeah.
But the following 60 years will be great.
Exactly. To say you were there, 100%. You know, there's always been this correlation with wrestling and comics. We've talked about it the last time. I'm not sure why it's so closely linked, but it seems for the majority, it's not the rule, but it's more of an exception, I find, when people hate wrestling but love comics. It's usually there's some deep-seated love of wrestling from whether you were a kid or lifelong wrestling fan, and you're also a comic book fan. What do you think it is? What is it for you?
I think part of it, you hit the nail on the head there. I think both are storytelling that we experience as young kids, right? And they help kind of those formative years as we're developing our sense of morals. Because comics, whatever you want to think of them, originally were designed for kids, and they were designed to help in many ways that kind of modern folklore. They serve a very similar purpose to that kind of, you know, the ancient myths and stories of heroes of ages gone by, and they really tap into that sense of a moral compass while you are forming what is right, what is wrong, and that sort of escapism and that fantasy life that you have, that you indulge, that imagination. And pro wrestling, for many, many, many decades, even still to this day, it's still generally, you know, good versus evil. This person's bad, this person's good. I identify with this person more than the other. I understand the conflict here. I understand right, wrong, and generally the good guy will win in some form or fashion. And then, you know, you move on to the next story, and it's a bit larger than life, and it stays with you. Mm-hmm. So I think they come from a very similar point in kind of our emotional development that we latch on to very young and that we revisit throughout our lives, and it evolves, and so we evolve with it. And you see that with our storytelling taste from what we read as kids and our comprehension, and that's why something like, you know, more mature comics came along, and that generation was like, yes, I'm a more mature reader now, so I can handle that storytelling, but still relates to what got me into it in the first place. So that's where I think it is, but I don't know. I could be wrong. What about you?
I think you hit a lot of the main points that I can't argue. I mean, it is that childhood connection. And I think, too, those characters that you saw on the television screen were the closest thing to what a superhero or a villain would look like, dressed in these elaborate costumes, you know, stronger than any normal person you would know. I mean, you look at the Ultimate Warrior running down the aisle, you know,
yeah.
Face paint, all those colors, summoning some sort of superpower, and you're thinking, like, nothing can stop this guy. That's in your head. Like, this is a real-life superhero in the flesh. It's almost – they almost are dressed exactly like He-Man in a way. So it's like these real-life cartoon characters come to life. So, I mean, in my superhero mind as a child, like, that is the embodiment of what I think I'm reading in these books. And you know, like, you look at a lot of the original costumes, like a Superman or a Batman, and people often make fun of them having their underwear on the outside of their superhero suit. But that was what, you know, acrobats and people in the circus used to dress like these strong men. So it makes sense that wrestlers, they dress like wrestlers to me.
Well, I mean, to your point there, from a cultural standpoint, pro wrestling comes from the carnival circuit.
Exactly.
Like, they were the strong men.
Exactly.
So it's, you always have that presentational you always have that presentational aspect of it, like a, that goes all the way back to the Carnies.
Right.
And yeah, and it's there. So I wonder if maybe there is something to be said for the fact that there is a little bit of inspiration from kind of a similar source, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. There's definitely some type of a connection. And then, you know, everyone had an alter ego of some kind, and the stories never really stopped. Like, there was always something new happening, unless, you know, they retired and aged out or whatever the case may be. But the story never stops. It's weekly. It's just always there. It's like going to being a Wednesday Warrior kind of thing.
Even now,
right.
Even during these incredible times, WWE is really one of the very few forms of entertainment that has continued uninterrupted this entire time, which is both terrifying on some level from a safety standpoint.
Yep.
And on the other hand, I am also selfishly grateful that I got to watch WrestleMania in April as everything was just getting worse and worse and worse and worse every single day.
Right.
And I will never forget that watching WrestleMania was the first time I had any inkling of the world would be okay, that I was doing something familiar and my ritual, and that I knew, and I was watching it with other people, you know, on Zoom, and just, it was, I was so grateful for it.
That's cool.
And that's the selfish, short-sighted part of me speaking. Don't get me wrong. But
no, but it's cool. We need to have those positive highlights still. We need to, as crazy as 2020 is to live through, there are a lot of things that it is supplying us in regards to simplifying and going back to doing those simple things in life that where the treasure really lies, you know, going for more walks. You can't go to all of these different things, but we can still, you know, do this together. And you can, you know, you appreciate that visit with a loved one a little bit more because you realize how easily it can be taken away. So as much as we appreciate the technology, the Zoom and the all of these different aspects to still connect, which is great, the other simplifying thing, like you being able to just watch WrestleMania, as silly as that may sound to someone, like everything's going to be okay. We still got WrestleMania.
We did. And then we had The Fiend versus John Cena, and I had to watch it like 30 times because it was just blowing my brain.
So I have this idea that I stole from David Harper from Off Panel. So shout out to David Harper because he did something like this, but I'm going to make it strictly wrestling themed, and I thought you would be the perfect person to do it with for the first time.
All right. No pressure.
So I want to take comic book characters and well-known wrestlers and mash those worlds together in a comparative way. And you can use any sort of comparison, whether it's a comic book writer, artist, character, as well as on the flip side of the wrestling aspect. So you're not beholden to saying, you know, who is Exo Manowar if he was, in the wrestling business. It could be any mishmash. So are you ready to get this going?
All right, let's do it. Hit me.
Okay, so I'm gonna start off with Exo. So Exo Manowar, Valiant Comics, one of my favorite characters. He's a fearless warrior with a weapon that knows no limits, but he isn't the most eloquent speaker, perhaps. So who would he be if he was a wrestler?
You know, I wasn't gonna go with this answer at first. And this is more the kayfabe answer, but I almost think the Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah. I was thinking that too.
He got his point across. He looked amazing. No one could stop him. He was drawing, from the cosmos and parts unknown. He looked like, you know, this like ancient sort of, he had sort of a Conan the Barbarian, like hairstyle and body and look.
Yeah.
I don't think Warrior was as tactically brilliant as Exo.
No.
But from like this man out of time drawing on the cosmos and could get anyone to follow him, and I think there's a solid comparison there.
Yeah, definitely on the kayfabe aspect of it, because I don't know how many people, even in the comics, people aren't the biggest fans all the time of Eric of Dacia. And in the wrestling, people weren't always a big fan of Warrior, the actual guy. Jim Hellwig was his name, right? But then he changed his name.
There you go.
He changed his name to Warrior officially.
And both guys are very rooted in their convictions.
That's right.
Of how they see the world.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good answer.
And there you go.
I was thinking, I mean, it's you're not supposed to really, you know, speak of the we're trying to think of the appropriate word. I was thinking someone like a Chris Benoit. I know it's not good to bring that name up when it comes to wrestling, but as far as his in-ring stuff and what he did as a performer, he wasn't the greatest on the mic.
There you go.
But wasn't
that's the
greatest.
That's the mishmash.
Yeah.
That's the mishmash.
Yeah.
Ultimate Warrior from a presentational standpoint.
Yeah.
Chris Benoit from an in-ring standpoint. And yeah. That would be your Exo Man of War.
Yeah. Very hard to find an equal to that guy. Okay.
Yeah.
What is the in-ring equivalent moment to the Batman storyline, Death in the Family? What was that? Because for a lot of people, it was that shocking moment. We can't believe this beloved character actually was killed. Now, no one, I'm not saying there's got to be a death in the ring, but what was that moment that just made your jaw drop? You couldn't believe it happened.
Ooh, I mean, when you look at something like that, I feel like it's got to be a faction breaking up, right?
Mm.
I wonder, I mean, for me, on some level, like, as a kid, it was probably Savage turning on Hogan as the Mega Powers exploded. But I would almost argue, I think the best equivalent right now is probably Seth Rollins breaking up the Shield when he took that chair and just demolished them and went and formed the Authority with Triple H and Stephanie.
Hmm. Okay. That's it. That, okay. Yeah. When you put it in those terms, that Hulk Hogan leg drop on Macho Man to form the faction. Yeah, like when you brought up the faction, see, I was thinking of like a moment where, you know, obviously the Montreal Screwjob comes to mind as that I can't believe that just happened.
Sure.
Or, you know, Stone Cold going heel and teaming up with McMahon, but that moment when Hogan goes bad. Yeah, that was that.
I saw that happen. And I tuned in for the follow-up on Nitro, and then I did not watch WCW for over 2 years because I could not stand to see Hulk Hogan as a bad guy. I refused. I was so mad about it. It actually made me stop watching WCW at its peak until like March 98th, I think was when I came back to it.
Wow. So when WCW was actually putting out some cool stuff was when Matthew was like, no way, I do not accept
all
that.
Of it. I've had to go back and rewatch everything. You know, in hindsight, a few years later, I would like buy all the pay-per-views on videotape and just re-go through all the history I missed.
And
a couple years later.
How was it watching it, like going back and watching it, knowing what happened? Did it hold up?
The cruiserweight division held up.
Yeah, it sure did.
Honestly, the Nitros were generally better than the pay-per-views, though.
Yeah, it's true.
You had all the really good storylines were happening on Nitro, and the main event matches were not great at that point in time. The top of the card was pretty boring to watch, but the cruiserweights were fantastic. And so, you know, you always knew you were going to get a great match out of them, at least.
Yeah, for sure. You know, you brought up the Mega Powers. And that year-long story development of the Mega Powers forming and then exploding to that moment at WrestleMania 5, it's hard to think of another storyline that was executed as well as that one over a long period of time. It's rare you find that happen anymore in wrestling.
It's rare to find that, and it's harder to do it these days.
Right.
Because you didn't have Monday Night Raw, you didn't have SmackDown, you didn't have to be on television 52 weeks out of the year the way that you are now, and you didn't have to have 12 pay-per-views a year, sometimes 14.
Right.
So it's just such a different way of storytelling. Because back then, you had... I mean, you didn't even have SummerSlam yet. You had
right.
Royal Rumble. You had three pay-per-views. That's it. Everything else, and you would sprinkle it throughout the Saturday night's main events, but you didn't do too many giant angles on there. Because Saturday night's main events were like once a month, once every other month at some point in that time. So it was a lot easier to tell a longer story time, and people were patient with it too. Today, it's so much harder. I think Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano is probably the best long-form storytelling of the last decade. No offense to Omega and Okada. But that story, the story of Omega and Okada, was nowhere near the depth and complication that they didn't have the same ambition from a storytelling aspect as Ciampa and Gargano did. Great matches, tremendous matches, and it's a very easy, simple story, and it was done very well. But at the same point in time, Gargano and Ciampa told many more chapters much more frequently, more twists and turns, and pulled off just an incredible rivalry for me.
So with that in mind, what do you think is the comic book equivalent of a storyline executed as well as the Mega Powers Explode?
A comic book storytelling, probably. Maybe the first Civil War.
Okay. Yeah.
Maybe.
Yep.
I actually also, if you want to go way, way back, I think there's something to be said for some of the early, like, Spider-Man run with Lee and Ditko. Like, the Master Planner saga was pretty epic. They had a really, really well planned out. I mean, at least it came out that way. But those are two examples. I'm trying to think from a DC side of where it goes from there. It's tough to do Image because Image wasn't that shared of a universe, so it's kind of different rules than what we're talking about here. But maybe on a DC side, you would go maybe Under the Red Hood.
I like that
maybe
story.
Under the Red Hood.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was... very personal, brother against brother sort of deal. You know, and it was told for about a year in the comics too. So
yes.
It lasted a long time.
Yeah, that's a good, the brother versus brother aspect of it. That's a good, good way to angle to go at it. I had one in the back, in the top of my head, and now I forgot what I was going to say, but I think you nailed it with the familial closeness of the characters involved.
See, I've never accepted that Bruce and Tim, I'm sorry, that Bruce and Jason were a father son.
Mm-hmm.
I've always seen them more as a big brother, little brother.
Yes.
I don't think Jason ever allowed himself to be considered Bruce's son.
Right.
You know, a mentor, you know, sure, a guardian, but not a father. That was Dick and Tim for sure. But I never saw Jason in that light. I can't wait for any hate tweets on that one.
No, I think that's fair. And even the way that they interact with each other in Under the Red Hood, you can see that there was this camaraderie of brotherhood between them. Like, definitely a big, big brother, but it wasn't the same way it was with Tim and Bruce. You definitely see that more fatherly. I think Tim and Damian fall into that son category. Even Dick and Bruce have that sort of brother camaraderie in a similar way. Those are good calls. I was going to say something like the Dark Phoenix saga that stretches over a certain amount of time, but it doesn't have that brother-to-brother sort of aspect to it. Yeah, good call.
I'll tell you what, though. It's a hell of a heel turn.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
That's a hell of a heel turn.
So, speaking of mega powers, let's stick to that for a second. Who would be the Miss Elizabeth of comics?
Ooh, yeah. All right, Miss Elizabeth. That's tricky. The Miss Elizabeth of comics.
And it could be on the creative side if you want. It doesn't have to necessarily be a fictional character. It's completely up to you.
I think maybe on the you know, let's go with the creative side. I think on the creative side, Lee Simonson is the Miss Elizabeth of comics.
So that would make Walt Randy?
You know what? I'll call Walt Simonson the Macho Man. Why not?
Why not? It's true. I like that. Yeah.
Walt was very kind. He was doing an exclusive cover for us one year for New York Comic Con, and I got to go out to his house to pick up a bunch of copies he had signed. And he gave me and another person from Valiant a very lovely tour of his home, and they were the nicest, most loveliest couple you'd ever meet in your life. So I have a lot of fondness for Louise and Walt.
Yeah, I mean, their work speaks for itself. I'm really big fan of both of their work. I loved when they were working on X Factor together, but I've heard even better things about them as people. So, you know, your testimony to that is just further solidifying that reputation. That's cool. Do you have a favorite thing that Louise Simonson created, something that she was a part of?
So many.
I know.
For me, my earliest memories are going to be kind of like the death and return of the Superman.
Yeah.
And her working on that. Like, I will... That's the earliest memory I have of Louise, so... Because of that that childhood allegiance to it, I'll probably say that for now.
Yeah, she wrote one of the best issues of that series that you referred to, Death of Superman, in the funeral for a friend portion, where the Kents, you know, they can't go to the funeral for their son that the rest of the world can enjoy, but they have their own little private thing at the back of the farm with just a few of his items from childhood. It was very emotional, so to be able to execute that at a time when everything was gritty and you know, all about how big and extreme things had to be, to have moments like that, that was a real testament to her writing.
It's a testament to her writing and just also a testament to, I think, her editorial prowess.
True.
Being able to see the forest from the trees at that time.
True. 100%. Okay. Moving on. You're a big tag team fan. You were at SummerSlam 90. You got to see one of the best tag teams in the world defeat Demolition, Hart Foundation, in that best 2 out of 3 falls. One of my favorite Hart Foundation moments. If Quantum and Woody were a tag team, who would they be?
Ooh, if Quantum and Woody were a tag team... you know what? All right. I've got a couple different ideas that we could go. I could go Attitude Era, and Attitude Era, I would actually go with the Hollies, Crash, and and Hardcore.
Okay.
And clearly, like, Woody would be Crash Holly. and Hardcore Holly is just a Quantum there who's just like beating up his little brother there, just like, what the hell's wrong with you? Just get your focus on. But they would win gold. They would win tag team titles, and they would create this amazing comedy stuff with the Hardcore title.
Mm-hmm.
But they were still, you know, they were still ass kickers, and you still feared them and you took them seriously. So I think it's the Hollies. I think that's where I would go with it.
That's a good pick. I wouldn't have thought them, but that's good. I would have thought maybe the Dudley Boys. Just because of like but the Hollies are good because there is that sort of comedy to them, and they're like this, they're this tag team that's an obvious tag team, but they're almost always at odds at the same time. That's a good one. I like it.
Well, and also like, nobody took them seriously until they won. You know, like, it's a
right.
very like journeyman sort of team.
Right.
Whereas like the Dudleys are too good. They had too much success
right.
to be Quantum and Woody. It's just, you know, Quantum and Woody is never, you know, the the people in the Valiant universe are barely ever going to look at Quantum and Woody and go, oh, that's the greatest tag team of all time. They're the greatest superheroes of all time. They would like to be thought of that way. And the Hollies used to, you know, build themselves as 400 pounds each.
Right.
So, you know, those delusions of grandeur that Quantum and Woody also have.
Yeah. I remember that now, seeing Crash come out with the scale on his shoulder.
With the scales.
Yeah.
Yeah, the super heavyweight.
Yeah, that's right. Good call. That's a really good call. Deep cut, too. I like it. Okay. So, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, one of the greatest of all time, one of the greatest WrestleMania matches, but oftentimes referred to as too nice of a guy, too nice to his detriment. Who would that be in the comic book world? Who was so good, but at the same time, too much of a babyface?
Oh man, that's a really hard question. Because I always look at Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, and I always look at a guy who's like, he could never turn heel. They could never turn Ricky the Dragon Steamboat heel. That's a stumper. That's a real stumper. Do you have a thought?
That's why I'm asking you. You're able to pull out these things out of nowhere. I mean, I guess maybe like a Steve Rogers kind of falls into that category a little bit. But he could get intense when it needs to. Like Ricky the Dragon was so straight laced. Even like he didn't want to, almost to the Owen Hart extent, where he didn't want to do anything that would make his kids at home question who he was in real life. You know, like that was kind of his reputation. But how about on a creative side? Is there something?
Oh, you know what? You know, maybe I was gonna say maybe Reed Richards.
He's got a little bit of a selfishness to him. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Ah, man. Steve Rogers is not a bad one.
It's just a little obvious.
Well, it's a little obvious, but that doesn't make it wrong. Trying to think who else. No, maybe not. I was going to say maybe Alfred, but he's got some edge to him.
Maybe this is
a hard one.
Maybe this is a weird pick, and I could be wrong. What about Buddy Baker, Animal Man?
Which run?
The Morrison run.
I can see that. That's pretty good. I'm really excited. You've got to put this question out in social media.
Okay.
We need to see. We need the listeners to absolutely chime in on this.
Can you think of someone on the creative side of comics who maybe, like you said before, Louis Simonson and Walt Simonson were just the sweetest couple? Are there people on that you've met who are like, man, that guy was just way nicer than anybody I've ever met?
There's so many. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to lie. That's one of the really cool things about comics. But one of them that comes to mind instantly, who I think is just one of the loveliest human beings alive. Actually, I'm going to name two. Rodriguez, who is been the artist for the latest New Mutants run with Hickman.
Okay.
He is hands down just such a sweetheart, such a class act.
He drew Cowell, right?
Sorry?
He was the artist on Cowell with Kyle Higgins? Is I'm thinking of the same guy?
Maybe. I'd have to go back. I only read the first volume of Cal, and it's been a while. He might have been.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember. But definitely, if you're not familiar with him, check him out. He's brilliant. Another guy that I adore to no end in the comic industry is Ibrahim Mustafa. He just was announced on a new book at Humanoids. I'm really excited to see come out next year. He worked on Mother Panic as part of Young Animal. He's one of those guys who just keeps rising up the ranks year after year. He worked on Dr. Fate for a while with Paul Levitz during that DCU run. And just, you know, couldn't get a nicer guy if you tried. and just so talented on top of it, and so humble, and a hell of a breakdancer. It's really a damn shame. I'm very jealous of that man on many levels.
That's awesome. It's always good to show a little bit of love to the creators. And you're right, there are so many. When you go to these shows, one of the nicest things is when you do meet someone you admire and they're nicer than you expected. So it's always good to shout them out. How are you doing for time? Can we do a couple more of these?
We can do a couple more. I probably got a few more minutes.
Okay. All right. So behind the scenes in especially WWE, Pat Patterson is known on a creative side to have been one of the, you know, the smartest guys when it comes to finishing, coming up with finishes for a match and, you know, helping out guys with in-ring work and things like that. Who would that be on a creative level in the comic book industry? Maybe an editor, just somebody behind the scenes who doesn't get the accolades or the recognition per se, but is the backbone of it all.
You know, I'm gonna say somebody, and I'm gonna be biased towards them because I consider her one of my dearest friends. But I also think she's just a brilliant storyteller and is tremendous, quite frankly, at finishes when it comes to stories. And I'm gonna say Heather Anthos.
Okay.
That she is such a gift for storytelling and such a gift for seeing the long form and for pacing and how to finish a story off, and how to leave you wanting more. And if you read the most recent Quantum of Woody series with Ryan Brown and Chris Hastings, you'll get a really good sense of that, just on, in terms of the Valiant side. And I'm so excited for the upcoming Shadow Man book that she's doing and Final Witness in the works. So she's really up there for me just in terms of minds in the industry when it comes to storytelling. So I'll give Heather a shout out there.
Very nice. One more question for you. This is the big one. If Matthew Klein was a manager, who would he be in wrestling?
Oh, man. If I got to be a manager, who would I be? There's who I would want to be, and then there's who I'd actually be.
give us both.
Who I would want to be is Bobby Heenan.
Man.
I'm not afraid to be the butt of the joke, and I'm happy to take it on the chin, but I'm also really thrilled to just, like, make a total ass of myself, and, you know, and I'll fight for my clients. I think who I would actually be, probably a bit closer, is I'd probably actually be Paul Heyman as a manager, not as a booker or anything like, or a writer or anything like that. But as a manager, I'd probably be the advocate.
Yeah.
Brock Lesnar.
Okay. Yeah. I could see it. I mean, the excitement that you have when you're at the cons and the total belief you have in your product kind of reminds me of somebody who, the only thing you're missing is a megaphone to tell us all to come get Valiant Comics, and I would think of Jimmy Hart. All you need is the jacket.
I can do that too. I just don't have as high of a voice as Jimmy.
No, nobody has that voice. But I mean, with how proud you are of Valiant Comics and the belief in them, all you need is the Jimmy Hart megaphone.
I take that as a huge compliment to be compared to Jimmy Hart. So I'll tell you what, next time I'm in town and I've got to work a convention in Toronto, I will see what we can do about getting a megaphone for me.
and you got to have the blazer with the music note. Yeah, absolutely. That's awesome. So is there anything we should be looking forward to in regards to Valiant Comics, things that are on the horizon?
Yeah. So, you know, coming through the last few months, you're going to see Rye and Bloodshot are starting back up in August. Really excited to bring you new arcs of the series, keep those things going. I'm so excited for what Rye is doing right now. Issue 6 comes out in a few weeks in the middle of August, I believe it's the 19th, with Dan Abnett and Juan Jose Rip coming back for more in the Wild Frontiers. Nice. I am a big sucker for post-apocalyptic sci-fi. And when you throw in that Western tilt right there, I can't get enough of it. So pick it up everywhere. Pre-order it now. You still have until Monday from the time that we're recording this. But let your local comic shop know. And I cannot stress it enough. It has never been more important to pre-order your comics right now, because that is a major indicator for comic shops and how they can stay financially healthy right now, and how you can support them, and how you can support industries and your favorite creators and your favorite characters. So go get a pull list, call your shop, tell them you want this book, tell them you want Ryan number 6, tell them you want the fully loaded edition of Bloodshot 7 with the Vin Diesel cover and 8 pages of behind-the-scenes stuff, including essays from Kevin Van Hook, co-creator of the character from the Valiant Universe days all the way back in the 90s. So pick them up. Going to be a good August. We've got the books coming back. We've got Ecto on your timeline. We're looking at where Shadow Man's going to be. We just announced the new Ninjak series that I'm so excited for. So a lot of big things are coming right down the pike.
That was very Heyman like and Jimmy Hart like. There you go. You just proved it.
There you go.
Awesome. Thank you, Matt. Always a pleasure to chit-chat. I hope you have a great weekend. You get your Grimaldi's, you get your ice cream, and hopefully we see each other soon and things open up more and more. And stay safe, whatever it is that you're doing. Keep up the good work.
That is the plan, and if anybody wants to argue with me, you can find me on Twitter at MatthewKlein316, because I am the bottom line. Feel free, give me a shout-out, ask about Valiant, ask about pro wrestling. Be part of the conversation. We're listening.
Awesome. Thanks, Matt. You have a good one, buddy.